session number 30304.
Real 36.
Yes, I was just explaining that the OTUs that I knew and to which all my friends had gone were, as I think I mentioned earlier, in two parts. One was the get the pilot to fly part and do his job properly, and the other was to crew him up, and then there would be a pilot needed. An ex-squadron, an instructor pilot, on certain occasions for the crewing up side of it. So there were times when a pilot might come from a squadron onto an OTU and not find that it was quite the job that he could satisfactorily do, and he might be put on to some other job. But at the flying instructor's school, there wasn't the certainty. I remember one. We were on night flying, and four or five pilots under tuition, so-called, were in an Oxford aircraft, which was the type used at flying instructor at the instructor's school, and. We were going on circuits and bumps one at a time. One would fly and then take over another one and so on. And then this was on Salisbury Plain, of course, at Uphaven. And a heavy mist came down, and we were unable to land, according to the instructor. So I said that I'd been qualified on both Lorenz and Babs beam flying. I'd be quite happy to take the aircraft down on the make an instrument landing. But he wouldn't have it. He just wouldn't take it. So eventually we stoozed around and landed at Hillavington, which meant a lot of ringing up and telling people where we've been and so on. So they weren't... It didn't give us much real... addition to our knowledge of flying to have taken that course, frankly.
I take it, potentially, as you say, because you'd had operational training as well, and you'd flown operationally, and you'd taught people as well, I imagine there was very little they could teach you on that course.
There was. It was... We're coming towards the end of the war in Europe, don't forget. There were many... examples of redundancy, redundant activities are beginning to emerge, such as when we went to advanced training units, which were simply refreshment units for pilots who had been trained overseas and had to come back by... most of them anyway, by sea, so that there had been quite a time, 4 or 5 weeks perhaps, they had not flown, and they were put on these courses. And no sooner would we have, and this was getting along to May, April, May, 1945, we would take them up and correct any faults which had emerged or give them a refresher on the Oxford. Most of them had flown Oxfords or Ansons in training. And they would then, within a day or two, when they completed the course, or even before they completed the course, they would be posted to a unit without any flying designation attached to the posting. Some of them, we learned, were finishing up as clerks in offices and so on. So there were areas which you might almost say had started to run down. I mean, for instance, one can't imagine the flying instructor schools, I say schools in the plural rather than going back into one, being necessary to continue with the war in the Far East. We weren't able to increase the amount of effort that we'd put into the war up to 1945, at least in my opinion, we weren't able to do any better than we, or any more than we had, had been doing. All we could do was transfer units which were either just starting to come into use or had been operating for some time out to appropriate bases in the Far East. So that, in a way, to me, this qualification as a flying instructor meant less to me than being able to instruct to the level that I had done previously at OTU and at the, on the BEAM course.
With the war coming to an end in Europe, how did you feel about that?
Well, I was obviously as pleased as anybody else that at last it was going to be over in Europe and that we could get back to some kind of normal living. Demobilization was offered to those who'd been in first, as it were, so I was out with my leave the end of January 1946.
Was there a question of you thinking of staying on?
Oh, yes. I had thought about it, but it was one of those difficult decisions. I had domestic circumstances to think about, and there was a lot of uncertainty. It meant if you had a commission before the war, of course you were okay, but obviously not everyone would be able to go into a permanent commission. And rather, I had a job in a bank waiting for me, and so I decided that because, largely because of domestic concerns, and that I would revert to that, at least for a time. Although it wasn't to last long, because during my stay at Little Rissington on number 6 Pilot Advanced Flying Unit, which I've just mentioned, I was billeted at a place, a typical Cornish hostelry, and Mr. Strong, forget his Christian name for the moment, Ken Strong, also ran about 30 acres of farmland, and I had opportunities because the amount of flying that I was able to do was now being reduced, I would nip off and give him a hand. The Merrymouth Inn, that was the name of it, the Merrymouth Inn. It's at a crossroads on the main road outside Little Rishington Airfield. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much, helping with the harvest. And, of course, they needed all the help they could get. And so I stuck it for about a year, I think, in a bank. And then I went and had a small farm in... I worked for a wing commander that I knew at Coastal Command in Yorkshire, and then eventually a small farm in Devon.
Can you sum up to me now how you feel now about having served with Coastal Command during the Second World War? How you felt about serving with Coastal Command in the Second World War?
How I felt about it?
Or how you feel now?
Feel. Yeah. Well, you know better than most people now how I feel about certain aspects of it, how it could have been better, without knowing all the background detail. It's all very well to criticize, of course, but one should only do it in the fullness of knowledge rather than to make a philosophical judgment, but I enjoyed it. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. It was the best 6 years of my life in many respects. The camaraderie was great, a thing I miss to this day. I met some grand chaps. I saw so much of this country and also one or two overseas, some in darkness and some in daylight. It was really, I'm glad it happened. So, yes, Coastal Command, I think, was a good setup. It was well organized. The powers that be within Coastal Command, from the CNC down to the group commanders, they were denied what they really wanted in favor of Bomber Command on too many occasions, I think, because we actually doing the job knew that we could achieve so much more if we had what we wanted, so that there were disappointments, but I think that the motto, constant endeavor, sums up Coastal Command in a very apt manner.